Do you ever struggle with the question, if God is good, why is there suffering? We unpack this timeless question in a free chapter download from Why You Can Believe. It's called Why Does God Allow Suffering? And it's honest, hopeful, and deeply personal. From free will to a broken world, to the way suffering can lead us to God, this chapter will equip you with real biblical insight. Get your free download today at premierinsight.org/resources. Again, that's premierinsight.org/resources.
Good afternoon and welcome along. This is Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley. For the next hour and a half or so, you're going to be hearing a discussion between a Christian and a non-Christian. That's typically what happens here on the programme. All kinds of issues get debated in one form or another here on the show that aims to get you thinking. Don't forget, you can find out more about our resources, podcasts, all sorts of things at the webpage, premier.org.uk/Unbelievable. And the show is, of course, part of our wider range of programming every Saturday called Faith Explored. And to that end, if you keep listening after Unbelievable today at 4 o'clock, you're going to be hearing the profile interview. My special guest today is Keith Ward, who is, of course, a philosopher, a Christian. He's going to be telling us about his extraordinary life journey. So do stay tuned for that between 4 and 5 this Saturday afternoon here on Premier Christian Radio. Time to tell you what's coming up on the programme today.
You're unbelievable.
Well, today on the show, we're talking about education and asking, should we keep the church out of it? Recently, the National Secular Society released a report suggesting that there's been a marked increase in the number of parents complaining about external visitors to school, particularly of the Christian variety, who have been perhaps using RE lessons as an instrument for evangelism. Well, we're going to be talking to the National Secular Society, certainly their president, Terry Sanderson, today, all about this. On the other side of this discussion is the Reverend David Robertson. He's director of the Solas Centre for Public Christianity. He's got a conference coming up soon in November on education. We'll find out a bit about that from him. He's been very critical of the report, so we're going to hear both sides of the story, as ever, here on the programme. First of all, let me say a very warm welcome to Terry Sanderson from the National Secular Society. Thank you for joining me today, Terry.
Hello.
It's great to have you with us. Terry, can you give us a little bit of a background, first of all, to this report, where it came from and what the main sort of concerns were that you were outlining in it?
Yeah, we noticed over the last year or so that there was an increasing number of emails arriving from parents telling us that they were alarmed at some of the groups that were going into their children's schools to do religious education lessons. Some of the groups were a little bit wild, a little bit evangelical in nature. They weren't really going in there to tell the children about religion. They were going in there to evangelize and proselytize. And the parents who were writing to us didn't quite want this kind of level of input into their children's RE. We had one parent, for instance, who wrote to us saying that the Gideons had been into her child's school. Nobody told them that they were going in. They just arrived and started handing out Bibles and telling the children, apparently, that this was the most important book that they would ever read, far more important than any science book. Well, you know, these parents were a little bit alarmed about this. This was not the education that they wanted for their children, and they wanted to be informed in future about these groups that were coming in to do RE lessons. I mean, the reason that so many of these things are happening is because RE in this country is in such a mess. It's sort of done differently depending on the type of school that your child goes to. For instance, if they go to a community school, the local authority has a committee that decides what the education agenda will be for that particular local authority area. If they go to a faith school, the faith school can decide entirely what they want to teach in RE lessons. Similarly with free schools and academies. So you have a range of different approaches to religious education, and no sort of predictability about what's going to happen with them.
Now,
at the same time,
sorry, I was going to say, what has been the response of the Department for Education to this report then?
Well, they're saying that they're not receiving any complaints about invited guests into schools. But we know for a fact that they are, because a lot of the parents who are writing to us are also writing to the department saying, you know, why didn't anybody tell me that this was happening at the school? They write to the school, to the heads of schools, who sort of make excuses and say, oh, sorry, it won't happen again and all this kind of thing. But they're just trying to fill a gap. They haven't got properly qualified RE teachers. The teachers who are in the school don't want to do it because they don't know enough about it. And so they invite these groups in. And these groups who are evangelical, I mean, if you read our report, you will see a lot of quotes from their own websites that make it clear that that's their agenda. And that they're happy to go in and fill the gap that's left by a lack of properly qualified RE teachers.
Well, it's very interesting. So the claim is that evangelical groups are using these RE lessons as sort of opportunities for evangelism. You did obviously write to the Education Secretary, Michael Gove, calling for national guidance on this issue of external visitors. We don't have anyone specifically on the show today to respond who is mentioned in the report in that sense, though I know that some groups have issued statements regarding the kind of activities they undertake. Let's talk to David Robertson, and we'll come back to you in a moment, Terry. Thanks for joining us. David Robertson is well known on the show. He's a minister up in Dundee, director of the SOLAS Centre for Public Christianity. Welcome along to the programme today, David.
Hi, Justin. It's good to be with you, even though I'm speaking all the way from Odessa.
Yes, indeed. You're in the Ukraine. Tell us exactly why you're there at the moment.
Well, ironically a bit, it's precisely because there's a more of a resurgence of the churches here, and including in the education system here. And I've been asked to come and give some teaching to church leaders and pastors on communicating the Christian gospel in the 21st century. So I'm here with about 70 church leaders from all over the Ukraine.
Mm. You're actually doing a conference on education up in Dundee in November. I believe it's the 23rd of November, isn't it?
That's correct.
What's inspired you to theme the conference this year on education?
Well, ironically, it was before there's been a considerable fuss in Scotland over alleged infiltration of creationists into schools, and now this report from the National Secular Society. And it was before all of this happened that we had decided that education was a key thing in our culture and society, and that the church should be thinking about how it is involved with this. Some of the criticism, I think, that are made in the National Secular Society's report, you can see where they come from, and there's some validity in them, and others, I think, I think they're wrong, actually, and I think they're actually very dangerous. So, you know, we want to look at the broader aspect of education and how we do education. But this particular aspect here of evangelicals being accused of infiltrating schools in order to evangelize, I think we have to face that question head on. So in that sense, I'm grateful for the report.
Okay. Just give us your response then after you read the report. What did you make of it in particular?
Well, I mean, I would have lots and lots of questions about it. I mean, there's one or two aspects of it I would actually agree with, I can see where Terry and the Secular Society you're coming from. But I mean, I'm curious about lots of things. I mean, I'm curious as to how many letters, whether there really has been an increase in this activity taking place, or just an increase in letters, and on what number is he talking about? The report itself is incredibly insubstantial. It's full of anecdotal evidence, and I think it's full of gossip, actually. I think it's designed to give an impression and instill fear of evangelicals infiltrating schools. It's not really a report. When you use the word report, it carries much more of an academic connotation. It's an expression of the National Secular Society's fears of Christian, especially evangelical, involvement in schools.
Okay. Fighting words from David there, Terry. Is it more about fear-mongering than a kind of a substantive concerns?
No, not at all. It is simply a means of drawing attention to a problem that is arising, and it is a problem for a lot of people. And what is included in this this report is not gossip. It's words that have been taken from the websites of the organisations we're talking about. And they're quite clearly evangelical in nature. They're quite clearly targeting schools with an agenda of proselytising. Their own words tell you this. They're quite open about it. There's nothing sort of suggestive about it. It's all out there in front, in their own words. So the idea that this is gossip or it's made up in some way to create panic is just not true. I would actually counsel people who have doubts about it to go and read it, because it's not really about what we think, it's about what they say.
David.
Can I just come in with that? Because I would also encourage people to read the report, and I think they'd be quite surprised how insubstantive it actually is. I mean, the bit there about being evangelical, well, of course, Scripture Union and Gideon's and so on are evangelical. They will state that. But I think there's a misunderstanding of what the word evangelical means. None of them say they're there to proselytize. In fact, I have a direct connection with Scripture Union. We would specifically disavow that. We're not there to proselytize.
Well, of course you would disavow it. I mean, I think it's...
But you're saying in our own words, we say that we are there to proselytize.
Yes, absolutely.
And now you're saying that, of course, we would disavow it.
Look at some of the quotes. Look at some of the quotes in the report taken from the websites. And it's quite clear that you're going into schools with the intention of bringing religion to children rather than telling them about religion, which is what religious education is supposed to be about. And... I think that's wrong,
but
so do a lot of
parents. If I could step in here for a moment, Terry, I mean, yes, it might be that you could find a motto or something on a...
It's not a motto. Please read the report.
Okay.
You'll see that it's more than that.
But are they saying that the reason they're going into schools is to evangelise? Or...
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So that's the claim there, David, that the reason they're going into...
What does Terry understand by evangelise?
They're going in there to make converts, to bring people to the faith, as they call it. I mean, even the Church of England says that it's using its schools for missionizing. And the Archbishop Pritchard, or Bishop Pritchard, I should say, the Church of England's own education supremo, is quite open about that. He said it at the General Synod last time. He said, what are we bothering about our Sunday schools for? The fact that they've collapsed doesn't matter now that we have 200 kids in the local school who we can use for mission purposes. And, you know, I think when somebody says something like that, it is quite clear that they're not taking an objective approach to religion.
But, I mean, I would have to simply say this. I don't think a single secular humanist or secularist takes an objective approach to anything in that sense.
What on earth are you saying that for? That adds nothing to the argument that we're making. It's just insulting.
No, Terry, the insult is when you set yourself up as being objective and other people who don't agree with you as being subjective. That's insulting.
Now, well, if you are quote mining, just point to the parts in our report that are not objective. We've tried very hard to say, you know, we're not making judgments about this, but we are presenting the evidence, and it condemns itself.
But you present no evidence, because what
of
you're doing is
we do.
the whole report is entirely subjective, because you have no idea what evangelism actually is. And what people are trying to do.
You tell me what evangelism in schools is, then.
Well, I don't think we do evangelism in schools. I think what we are seeking to do is communicate the good news. Now, I would say the good news of Jesus Christ, of course.
Yeah.
Christian groups are going to do that. Now, for example, part of that good news is that all children are equally made in the image of God, that they're all equally valued, and so on. We would say that. You have gone from... going on from talking about evangelism to suggesting that we're trying to proselytize and make converts. The fact is, if you've got a decent Christian theology at all, and I accept that some Christians don't, no Christian would teach that we can convert anyone. It's only God who does that. But we do think that children should be presented with information. And I think, for example, an example of the incredible bias in your report is the thing of the Gideons. Now, why would anyone object to receiving a Bible? The Bible is the most influential document in British history, and I find it incredible that people would object to be given a Bible. In fact, I would regard it as fairly normative that every child, Richard Dawkins, for example, argues that every child should be biblically literate. And how are they going to do that without a Bible? I think it's a wonderful thing that free Bibles are given out.
Well, unfortunately, not everybody agrees with you. And some of the people who are writing to us are saying, you know, that they don't want their children to have a Bible, that the parents want to educate them in religion in their own way. And that to me seems like a reasonable thing to say. The fact that they're doing it behind the parents' backs without asking their permission first, without telling them it's going to happen, that's what worries people.
Well, just to come back to you, David, I mean, how would you feel if your child at school was given a Quran by a Muslim organisation in a school? Would you be happy for that?
Yeah, I would. Would you be happy with the
message attached to it that it was the most important book in history? And much
no,
more
when
important
I tell them
than
it
Bible.
Wasn't, but I wouldn't.
That's what you just said about the Bible.
Yes, and I think I'd be prepared to argue that for the Bible. But I tend to have more trust in both the individual capacity of children and also of their parents to think and rationalise for themselves. I don't need the National Secular Society to protect me. And I think one of the problems there is, are we going to go to the least common denominator? What if parents start saying, well, we don't want Shakespeare because we don't like this play, or we don't want that book, or we don't want Stonewall in our schools, or we don't want this, or we don't want that? I'd be really interested to know exactly how many messages you have received.
Well, it runs into dozens, and that's only because, they're just the people who are writing to us. There must be hundreds of people who don't write to us in that situation.
Yes, and there's, what, 50 million people in England? And let's say that at least half of those are involved in education at some aspect. And
yes,
you're telling me that you've got dozens of messages, and therefore this indicates that there's a real growing and increasing problem. I think this is what I meant by the report being useless, because you don't give figures, you don't give numbers. It seems a tiny minority allowing you to express your opinion that Christians should be kept out of education.
Well, the reaction to the report seems to be rather different to that. The reaction has been overwhelming. We've had hundreds of people writing to us saying the same thing's happening in our school. And they're alarmed about it. And the fact that, you know, Christians have this very special privilege to come into schools and start giving their message, not just for an hour, but for weeks and weeks on end, from the age of 5 to the age of 19, they have to have compulsory religious education of a mainly Christian character. And I think, you know, that is disproportionate in a school that has limited... Disproportionate to the amount of time that's available for education.
Can I ask, how many members does the National Secular Society have?
What has that got to do with anything? Are we arguing about religion in schools, or are we talking about the National Secular Society? I came here to talk about religion in schools. Right, well, can we talk about that then?
Yes, but we are talking about religion in schools, and you just made the statement that in a predominantly Christian country, having that being predominantly about Christianity...
It is not a predominantly Christian country anymore.
The majority of people would still profess that. The point I am making about the National Secular Society...
The statistics do not profess that.
Okay, carry on, David.
The point I'm making about the National Secular Society is this, that you have issued a report which deigns to tell us what should be happening in schools, and you are a tiny, tiny group. I'm saying
Can I just say that the report does not deign to tell anybody what should be happening in schools. It just reports what is happening in schools. And, you know, if we want to talk about religious education, let's talk about religious education.
But we're not just talking about religious education. We're talking about the nature of our schools and what's involved, and in terms of our children.
Exactly.
And you did not issue the report to say what was happening. You issued the report to issue a warning and to say that this should not be happening in schools.
It doesn't say that at all. It says this is happening in schools, and some people have raised the alarm about it.
Yes, and so the National Secular Society is neutral about it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we are. We're neutral about religion, but we are not neutral about religion overstepping the bounds. And I think when you go into schools where there are children of 7 and 8 years of age and start giving them a very strong evangelical message, that is influential on them. And I think that some parents don't want that to happen to their children, and they have a right to say so.
Of course they have a right to say so. Some parents do want it to happen, and they have a right to say so too.
Of course they do, but if you're not telling parents that it is happening, how are they going to make a decision about what to do about it? They only find out about this when the children come home from school with Bibles with messages about creationism that they don't want them to have.
It strikes me, though, that what David's main concern here, Terry, is that you're overstating this, that you're saying this is a growing problem and so on, that there's actually relatively little evidence within the report. It's anecdotal and so on. And the Department for Education say they're not aware of formal complaints being made. Now, you say you think they have been made, and so there's obviously a disconnect there. But are you, what's the response to that? Are you making more of an issue of this than there actually is?
No, we're not making an issue. We've stated the facts, and the people can make whatever they like of it, whether they think it's a minor issue that doesn't concern them, or whether they think it's an important issue that does concern them and their children in schools. That's up to them to make up their mind. We just issued the report with the facts in it as we have found them. We've made no judgment about the importance of those facts, and you make of it what you will.
Okay. David, go on, and then we'll probably be going to a break soon.
Well, I mean, I find it incredulous and almost newspeakish to say that the National Secular Society have issued this report and they're neutral about it. I mean, even the words they use, for example, their first main finding, there is a significant and growing incursion of evangelical organizations into publicly funded education. Now, they've written this in order to condemn it. They've actually provided virtually no facts. There are no statistics, no facts and figures. It is a report entirely based upon subjective impressions, as Terry has admitted, upon a few dozen out of millions of parents writing in. I mean, it really is. I think it's quite.
What do you make of the more general point that the current stipulation for RE is that it's generally teaching of a generally Christian character? Do you feel that as this country has its roots in historic Christianity, that should remain the case, that we're not necessarily talking about we should make everything absolutely level in terms of all views being represented within the classroom?
No, you couldn't possibly do that. I mean, what would you be talking about? I mean, I think one of the things that the report does is the most basic error. It doesn't distinguish between religious observance and religious education. Now, religious education should be education about religion, giving people the basic facts and perceptions on religion. Religious observance is something that is, of course, very different. I think that when evangelical groups go in to help in schools, sometimes they do go in to help with religious education. Sometimes they go to help with religious observance, but sometimes they also go in to volunteer on social projects with children's clubs, breakfast clubs, and so on. And like most evangelical groups, they tend not to use these to proselytize. In fact, one of the things that would intrigue me was if you withdrew all the evangelical groups from Britain's schools today, which volunteers are going to replace them? Because it's not going to be the secular society are not going to send volunteers into schools to do all this work that we are doing. In my own city, Dundee, if you removed the churches from youth work, there'd be virtually no youth work going on, especially in this age of council cuts and government cutbacks. So I think the National Secular Society report is dangerous in so many levels. It has no factual basis. It is designed to stir up prejudice against evangelical Christians and warn people about, start a witch hunt about creationism. It's designed entirely to scaremonger, and it doesn't recognize the harm it could do by chasing away those people who are selflessly giving, not because they want to attract people to their group, but because they're seeking to serve Christ by showing his love without proselytizing. That's what all the organizations I know seek to do.
Okay, we're going to go to a break soon, but Terry, chance to respond before we do that.
Yeah, well, as usual, David has gone off into the stratosphere about something entirely different to what we actually started talking about. Nobody's saying anything about the good work that Christians do in youth clubs and in schools and so on. What we're talking about is evangelical groups going in there with the intention of making converts, and that is definitely what they are trying to do. That's nothing to do with the good work that Christians do. That's acknowledged and appreciated. So how we've got off to, you know, this report raising concerns about the nature of some of the groups going into the schools has suddenly become a wholesale attack on Christianity. I don't know how we've managed to get there.
We are going to take that break, but it's interesting stuff. You're listening to Unbelievable this Saturday afternoon, and we'll hear David coming back. We're asking, this is sort of getting us into the general question on today's show, of should we keep the church out of education? And perhaps we'll get Terry to talk to that particular question in a moment's time. We're looking, though, specifically at a report by the National Secular Society recently. Concerns that evangelical groups are using religious education lessons as opportunities for evangelism. That's what the content of the report was detailing. And to tell us about that, Terry Sanderson was me on the programme today. David Robertson, director of the SOLAS Centre for Public Christianity, also with me today. Now, if you want to get in touch and leave your thoughts on this discussion today, be interested to hear from you. Perhaps you're a Christian or a non-Christian parent in a school. What do you think of the sort of religious education that's being provided? Do you share similar concerns to the National Secular Society? Are you very happy with the way it's provided? Be interested to hear from you. Do email unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can, of course, send in your thoughts via tweet and Facebook, etc. Facebook.com/unbelievablejb or tweet me @unbelievablejb. All those links and more available from the website. As ever, that's premier.org.uk/unbelievable. We'll be back in a couple of moments' time continuing this discussion between Terry Sanderson and David Robertson.
Are we the products of chance or intention? Does the cosmos leave space for God? Does Darwin dispense with God? Does the human mind reflect a mind behind the universe? Exploring the God Question is a new 6-part DVD study series investigating a major talking point of our time, science and God. Some of the world's best scientists and philosophers arguing from both sides of the debate with open, frank and rigorous discussion and fascinating results. Exploring the God Question is designed for individual or small group study as well as for schools and public presentation. To order and find out more, visit thegodquestion.tv/explore. Explore the search for truth.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to this afternoon's programme with me, Justin Brierley, and we're talking about education and the church today, asking, should we keep the church out of education? Recently, the National Secular Society claimed that evangelical groups are using religious education lessons as opportunities for evangelism. They say they've received reports, letters, concerns from parents about this. They've submitted that to the Department for Education, who have more or less rejected it, but our spokesperson today, Terry Sanderson, who's president of the National Secular Society, feels that more needs to be done. David Robertson is on the line as well, on the line from Ukraine, where he's currently contributing to a conference. But he's got his own conference going on up in Dundee on Saturday, the 23rd of November. It's on education, which is why we've got him on today for this discussion with Terry. In that last section, David, Terry was saying, you know, you're talking about things that have really nothing to do with this report. We're not here to have a downer on Christianity or even the involvement of Christians in schools. We're just concerned about these particular instances. Any response to that and why you do feel there is a wider concern here about the influence of secularism in education?
Sure. I mean, the particular instances are anecdotal. As I say, there's no substantive evidence in the report whatsoever. If you want to know where the National Secular Society are going, just take Terry's opening remarks about those who are a little bit wild, such as the Gideons. Now, anyone who knows the Gideons is going to be highly amused at the idea that they're a little bit wild just for giving children Bibles. I mean, I find that's an extraordinary example of what is said. And also, although Terry says this is not an attack on Christianity, he quotes in the report, or the National Secular Society quote in the report from various websites. They quote mine. They're not talking primarily about religious education. I have no doubt at all that there are Christian groups whose theology is awful, who seek to proselytize, who are seeking to make things for themselves, as there are many other groups. But the vast majority of groups that are mentioned there, that's not what they intend to do. In religious education, you give people information. In religious observance, it's about worship and Christian worship. There are what we would call mercy ministries and other things as well. As I say, the report is seeking to create a problem where there really isn't a problem.
Okay. You obviously disagree on this, Terry. What would you like to be done, given your concerns? Do you want the guidelines to be tightened up as regards what kind of groups are allowed into classrooms?
Yes, I think so. I mean, one of the complaints that we had was about an organisation that had told children that somebody who'd been involved in one of their prayer circles had been healed of a disease. This is the kind of thing that parents find alarming when their children come home and tell them that's been told to them at school.
But let me just get that straight. So the concern was that the Christian group had come in and said that within a sort of prayer gathering that they run, someone had experienced a healing.
Yeah, a child.
Okay, so the concern was that they shouldn't be telling children that other children have been healed.
Not by prayer. No, not they shouldn't.
But isn't that just
making?
Okay,
they should be making claims like that.
Right. What do you make of that, David?
True. Well, I was going to say, what if the claims are true?
That can never ever be proved. And
well, I'll give you. Let me give you proof. I'm a chaplain in the school, and I've just been asked to be chaplain in another school. I'm going to go there. They're going to ask questions, as they always do. There'll be questions about suffering. There'll be questions about God. There'll be questions about healing. I will warn them to be very discerning and so on about this. But if they'll say to me, do you ever know anyone who was healed? I would say, yes, myself. And should I not be allowed to say that? Is that abusing the children? Is that wrong?
I don't think that's an appropriate thing to be saying to school children.
That's why the National Secular Society should not be allowed to determine what is said to children. You do not have the right.
We do not seek to determine that. We're looking for an education system that educates children in facts about that are provable. And if they want to have religious education, then that's fine. That is where you can tell them about things like miracles and so on. Tell them that some people believe that. But if you go into a school and say, it happened to me, it is absolutely true because I say so, and you're saying that to 7 and 8 year olds, I think that's wrong.
Well, of course you think it's wrong because you don't believe it. But that's the problem. You are seeking to impose your philosophy on your beliefs on the whole education system of the United Kingdom.
No. I'm just trying not to let you do that.
But you see,
I'm not, I don't have a problem.
I don't go into schools telling people that miracles don't exist, and you shouldn't go in there telling them that they do exist.
Well, you see, I don't have a problem. If you're asked in a school, if you are there as a humanist chaplain or whatever, and you are asked, do you believe that miracles exist? I'm not going to ask for you to be prosecuted. I'm not going to set up and write out a report and warn about the infiltration of atheists and secularists.
Oh, I think maybe you would.
Numerous anecdotal.
I think maybe you would.
No, I wouldn't. Because I grew up with that. I grew up in a school education system where there were many teachers who mocked my Christianity. And I can give you numerous anecdotal evidence of Christian children who've gone to school and who've been taught by teachers and mocked by teachers because of the beliefs of their parents. And I think that, I mean, I actually think it's perfectly okay for you to be in a school and to say, no, I don't believe that miracles happen. But it is not okay for you to say that any group that does believe miracles happen should not be allowed in that school.
Some parents don't want their children to be told that. What about the children whose parents want to raise them differently and not to be told that miracles are real and that creationism is the truth? If they don't want their children to be taught that, they should not have them coming home from school saying that is what they've been told. Yes, they do have the option of withdrawing them from religious education and from religious observance, but often these groups come in without the parents' consent, and the parents only find out about it afterwards.
But Terry, there are lots and lots of people who come into schools without consent. I mean, there are lots of groups that come into my daughter's school who I'm not asked for consent for. I tend to have a much higher view of parents' rationality and ability than you seem to do. Because when my daughter hears something from some of the groups that come in, she comes back, we discuss things. I say, well, what do you think of that? And I'll tell her what I think. I mean, you seem to be terrified that someone is going to teach something that goes against your philosophy. And I just find that so intolerant.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the Christian message is given to them every single day of the week. By law.
Well, I don't know a single school where that happens, but I mean, you must be particularly blessed in England.
Yeah, well, that certainly does happen. We have things called faith schools, and I know in Scotland you also have denominational schools. And if you're trying to tell me that they don't give a Christian message every single day of the week, then I don't believe you.
Well, I know you don't believe me, but I'll give you the anecdotal evidence. They don't actually. The vast majority, they're required to have a school assembly once. I mean, six times a year. I think in most schools, it's to be once. To be honest, usually most schools' assembly are so wet and dull and uninspiring that I wouldn't want them as an advocate for Christianity as well.
I want to come back to you on this issue of miracles and so on, Terry, because I can hear perhaps the concern of some Christians is, well, if you're saying Christians shouldn't be telling children that they believe that miracles happen, well, does that not discount the Christian religion altogether? Because it's based upon miracles. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is a miracle. Is it out of the ballpark to say I believe in a miracle?
In religious education, I think it's okay to give an objective account of what Christians believe and what Muslims believe and what Hindus believe. But it never is objective. That is the point. They're presenting it, some of these groups, as the truth. And children are supposed to believe it. And a lot of them do. They come home and they start to tell their parents, you know, this is what happens.
Well, I suppose the question is, when they present it, do they present it as this is what happened, or are they saying this is what I believe happened? And it may be sometimes hard to disentangle those two.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But David is saying that he goes into schools and telling people that he did experience a miracle or some kind of healing.
But wouldn't it be wrong for David to sort of pretend he didn't believe that he experienced a miracle? I mean,
It depends in what capacity he's going into schools. If he's going in there as a visitor, a one-off visitor who's going in there to say, these are the things that I believe and the things that my church believes, and then leave it at that, that's fine. But a lot of these groups are going in day after day after day and reinforcing their message over and over again. And I don't mind visitors coming into schools and telling people about all kinds of things. You know, it's interesting to see what's happening in the world and what different people believe. But when you're giving the same message every day of the week, then that becomes something different from just presenting the facts. It becomes a kind of indoctrination.
Honestly, Terry, it's just making me smile here because this notion that there are schools, I mean, I'd love to know where they are. I mean, maybe some fundamentalist Islamic schools or maybe some private Christian schools. But these schools which are indoctrinating children into Christian doctrine every single day of the week.
You say you're a chaplain at a school. Did I hear you say that?
Yes, I am a chaplain. But I'm not indoctrinating children into Christian.
What is a chaplain doing in a school? It's supposed to be educating children. I just don't understand why religion has got such a huge influence in schools.
Well, I can tell you why. I can tell you why historically, and I can tell you why philosophically and theologically and so on. But the bottom line is that the vast majority of schools, education systems, universities and so on in this country were founded out of Christianity and out of a Christian philosophy. And what you find is that, many of the schools, about a third, I think, in England are C of E schools and so on. Christians have always been involved in education. Secular humanists and atheists tend not to build schools. They tend just to take over ones that have been created by Christians and other faith groups.
We have a great interest. We just pay for them.
So we pay for them too. That's the point. The point is we should probably, I mean, I would advocate a Dutch system whereby, I mean, you quote in your report something that's fascinating. Article 2, Protocol 1 of the European Convention on Human Rights, which says, in the exercise of any functions which it assumes in relation to education and teaching, the state shall respect the rights of parents to ensure such education and teaching in conformity with their own religious and philosophical convictions.
It doesn't say that the state has got to pay for it. It doesn't say that the state shall pay for it.
It doesn't say that the state shall pay for it, says Terry. What do you say to that, David?
Well, I'm maybe a too old-fashioned socialist, but I happen to believe it's good for the state to pay for education. And I happen to think that the state should not just pay for the education of secularists or according to a secular humanistic or atheistic philosophy. I think that we should probably go the Dutch system.
What you're saying there, though, David, is you think that by removing specifically Christian sort of aspects to education, you're thereby empowering a sort of secularist agenda. Now, I suspect, Terry, you disagree with that.
Well, a secularist agenda is really just a neutral agenda. It's really saying that you can teach about religion by all means because it's an important part of the world. As we see from our newspapers every day of the week and from the TV news, religion is always at the top of the agenda. So kids have got to know about it, but they have got to know the whole story, not just the nice bits. And unfortunately, the Christian groups that come into schools will just give the positives all about how wonderful everything is. And it's not always wonderful. Sometimes religion misbehaves and sometimes religion is misused. And I think that children need to know that too. And you can't do that if you haven't got an objective approach to religion. And at the moment in schools in Britain, we do not have an objective approach.
What do you make of the claim that it's neutral then, David?
Well, that's the one that you know, I often say for my atheist friends that they live in a fantasy world, and there is no bigger fantasy than this, that secularism or secular humanism or atheistic materialism, whatever, is neutral. The notion that the National Secular Society are neutral about religion that's almost, you know, stand-up comedy routine. It really, I mean, for example, the report, let me give you one example of the so-called neutrality. The report says this, sexual health and reproduction, the impact of these groups on sexual health and reproduction is extremely troubling. The material taught is persistently inaccurate and biased with long-term effects on the life of both sexes, but especially girls. And the source of this is Brooke, the Young People's Sexual Health Charity, Brooke, who are extreme advocates of abortion. Now, the notion that this is neutral, I actually think that the materials produced, for example, by CARE on sex education are objective. I think that they are honest. I think they are fair. I think that they assess the facts. But they do not fit in with the secular society's agenda, which is not even remotely neutral. So this is a complete pretense that the secular society is neutral. They're not neutral at all.
Secularism is there to give everybody a fair crack of the whip. And as things stand in schools at the moment, Christianity is overweening. As you've said yourself, a third of the school system in this country is under the control of Anglicans. And they're a tiny, tiny section and denomination of Christianity now, but they still have a third of the education system under the control, and they're quite openly using it to try to shore up their own survival. They've turned away from their primary purpose of saving souls and turned to education to try to evangelize and create the next generation of Anglicans. And the Catholics do exactly the same in their schools. And now Muslims and Hindus and Sikhs are at it too. I think it's wrong that religion takes over a school and makes it a single faith school. You cannot possibly have objective religious education in a single faith school. A single faith school is entirely that.
It's back again to the myth of objectivity. I mean, it's not just some Christians who proselytize, it's also atheists and secularists and others. I mean, I read, for example, Richard Dawkins quoting Dorothy Kellman saying that children are innate creationists and have to be educated out of it. Now, the fact is that there are many people who seek to use the school system to put forward their own views. I think actually from a Christian perspective, because we believe that we cannot convert anyone, and because we believe in toleration and because we believe that it's wrong of us to impose our religion, a Christian state education system is one of the most tolerant and open that there can be. But I think the kind of state education system that Terry and the National Secular Society seem to be advocating is you can only teach what is in accordance with their views, or you can only allow those views to be put forward. And as I say, it is fundamentally intolerant, and it's an intolerance fed by a delusion of objectivity, which is just not there.
There are times and places where it's appropriate for children to be told about religion and to be encouraged in religion, and those places are not schools. It should be maybe in church or at home where they're told what kind of religion they should be following, or encouraged to be following. If parents want their children to follow a particular religion that they also follow, then home's the right place for the parents to encourage that, and church is the right place, or whatever kind of place of worship is appropriate. But I think that to go into schools and say, you know, this is church, which is actually what the Archbishop of Canterbury said, school is church, then that's wrong. That's not the appropriate place. And I think that any child who wants to explore religion and to make their own mind up about what they want to believe, they can't do that when there are constantly people hammering into them that this is the true religion. And that's what happens particularly in faith schools. This is the right way to do it. In Catholic schools, you actually have to learn the catechism. You have to be prepared to be confirmed. All these kinds of things. That's not objective religion. That is indoctrination. They're telling you that you're a Catholic.
Well, I again, come back to the whole idea. If people want their children to be atheists and not to read the Bible and so on, then it's at home that they should be taught that. I mean, it works both ways. They shouldn't be being taught that in school. They shouldn't be being taught that de facto.
They aren't taught that in schools. They aren't.
Yes, but they shouldn't. But you're saying that parents, you know, if they don't want their children to get the Bible, they shouldn't have to get their children the Bible. If I don't want my children taught secularism or atheism, I'm sorry, but they are. That is the default position. The bit that I quoted about your sexual health and reproduction and so on, those are your views and values. You seem to think, and you want to reduce Christianity in particular, and other religions as well, to being kind of religious in the same way as people choose to be Star Trek fans or something, as a kind of personal hobby. But it's not. It's a way of life. And I have a right, as your report says, to have my children educated in the philosophy and religious beliefs. And what I don't understand is your incredible intolerance of a system where you only want your philosophy to be taught.
I do not want my philosophy to be taught. I don't want your philosophy to be taught. I don't want any ideology or theology to be intruded into schools where they're not appropriate. I think.
So you think that you can run a school without philosophy?
No, I didn't say that.
No, so which philosophy should it be?
Ideology, I said, and theology. These are very important issues, but they're not appropriate for schools. And I think that there are other places where people should pursue those ideas.
So you say that we can run it. We have to have philosophy to run a school. Which philosophy?
Well, it's just a school is there for a purpose, that is to educate children academically. It's not there to inculcate them in ideas. We do not have Tory schools. We don't have Labour schools. We don't have schools based on any political philosophy. Why should we have schools based on a religious philosophy? It's not a way to allow children to make up their own minds.
But in a sense, I mean, just to put this to you, Terry, schools are there to talk about values and about issues like, say, human sexuality, end of life issues. Those kinds of things will come up. They might be within the RE syllabus, but they might come up in other situations, biology and so on. And I suppose that the question is, well, we're all coming with a different views on what the best expression of those kind of moral issues are. And is it going to be the Christian one or the secular one, or at least, you know, so the example Dave gave about the fact that you suggested that the neutral position should be the one which was actually, to David, looks like a quite anti-Christian view in that sense. This is where the problem is it?
Well, partly, but also that the problem arises in the fact that not all Christians agree what the best approach is to any of these issues. And so you don't get a united Christian approach to any of it. There are some Christians are quite happy with gay relationships or with euthanasia or with abortion or any of these issues, and others that are very strongly against them. So what is the Christian message that you're going to give to children in schools? It's got to be biased because it's going to come from one or other of those points of view. If you have an objective education, children will hear all those points of view and be left to make up their own mind. They won't be told, as they are in Catholic schools, that abortion is wrong, that homosexuality is wrong, that euthanasia is wrong. All those ideological points of view are drummed into children at Catholic schools. Similarly, in Anglican schools, they're given what's called moral guidance, i.e. they're told what to think. And I think this is wrong because not everybody agrees with that particular approach.
Yeah. OK, David, not all Christians agree on these things, and we shouldn't be drumming it into children anyway, just from one perspective. What's your comment?
Well, I just simply asked Terry, is abortion right?
That is a completely subjective answer that I would give you. I mean, it's nothing to do with what I think. It's a matter of whether children are able to weigh up the facts for themselves after they've heard the arguments from all perspectives.
And you've said it shouldn't be taught in schools that abortion is wrong. Should it be taught in schools that abortion is right?
I didn't say that. I didn't say it should be taught. It was wrong. I said all points of view should be listened to and people should make up their own minds, as inevitably they will.
Well, you've just completely negated your whole report, because if all points of view should be listened to and people should make up their own minds as they will, then handing out Bibles or having evangelical groups come in, they should be listened to and their points of view should be there and people should make up their own minds.
You've just completely negated
your whole report.
But they should be listened to, but only for a limited time. I mean, we've also discovered and had complaints about an Alpha course operating in a school. Now, the Alpha course goes in there specifically to make Christian converts and making them from a fairly evangelical, a fairly right-wing point of view. And we don't think that's appropriate. We don't think the Alpha course should be operating in a school. If people want the Alpha course, they should go to a church. And this applies across the board. Invite people in to put their point of view, and leave children to make up their own mind. You don't invite them in over and over again to keep reinforcing it.
Okay, quick response,
well,
David.
I'm absolutely delighted that Terry, president of the National Secular Society, is now agreeing that evangelical groups should be invited into schools to put their point of view.
Period.
I mean,
that's
what you've just said.
Yeah, but that's not what you want. Certainly that's not what these groups are doing. They're going.
I'm genuinely absolutely delighted that you think evangelical groups should be invited into schools to put forward their point of view. I think that's
all
wonderful.
All Christian groups, all Muslim groups, groups from all over the political spectrum should be invited in to put their point of view to children, but they should be allowed to do it once, not to go in and reinforce their message and indoctrinate children with it.
See, that's extremely difficult to put the Christian message across once. It would take me quite a while to do more than that. And I also don't believe that you think
your
all groups...
Your particular Christian view, not the Christian view.
Yeah, I don't think you think Al-Shabaab should be invited in to put a particular terrorist point of view in schools. I mean...
I don't.
Your whole,
not.
So you don't
it's
mean
ridiculous.
All Muslim groups. You don't
it's
mean
ridiculous.
All Muslim
they're illegal. Yeah. You don't invite illegal groups to come into schools.
Yes, but I suspect there are even some legal groups that you wouldn't want in. I mean, the bottom line is that what you're advocating when you say neutrality is not neutrality at all. I mean, I'll come back to this abortion thing about abortion being a right or abortion not being a right. The fact is that secular humanists, the National Secular Society, you have your own values. I admit that secularists, like Christians, fall out amongst themselves about what it is, but you tend to be much more monolithic than most Christians are. And you seek to impose those values through an education system. And it's almost the worst kind of fundamentalism when you've got a fundamentalism who then says that they are being objective. You are not being objective.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll allow Terry to come back and David to bring that point as well about the abortion issue again. Quite a strong points of view on both sides today on the programme. You're listening to Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley, talking about whether the church should keep out of education. Terry Sanderson, president of the National Secular Society, is with me, as is David Robertson, director of the Solas Centre for Public Christianity. And we're taking your thoughts on this as well. Do make sure to email me your thoughts on today's discussion. unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Welcome back to the third and final part of Unbelievable this Saturday afternoon, part of the Faith Explored lineup of programming here on Premier Christian Radio. Do stick around from 4 till 5 this afternoon. My special guest on the profile is Keith Ward. He's the former Regius Professor of Divinity at Oxford University. He's a Christian. In fact, he's ordained in the Anglican Church. But he's going to be talking about his academic life as a philosopher, how that works when you're a Christian and you're in the world of academia, but also pastoral life, working with people within a church context, speaking to the bereaved, that kind of thing. We're going to cover all kinds of ground in what will be a really interesting life interview between 4 and 5 this afternoon with my special guest, Keith Ward. A number of people have been asking, and apologies again on this, whether the profile interviews will be made available as a podcast in the way that Unbelievable is online. There are certainly plans to do that. We're just actually in the process of updating our podcasting system here at Premier Christian Radio, and so we felt it made sense to hold on to that until that's ready to go, and then all of the episodes of the profile that we've aired up till now and continuing onwards will be made available online. So apologies that hasn't happened yet. Hopefully it'll be an early Christmas present before long, and you'll be able to gorge on many interviews that have been occurring since about mid-August up to the present. That's all to come this afternoon. Next week here on Unbelievable, very exciting guest joining me. And this kind of all happened at the last minute. He said he was in town. I said, can you come in? He said, OK. N.T. Wright, Tom Wright, is joining me here in the studio. Those who are familiar with Unbelievable will know that he joined me back in February to have a debate with James White on justification, the new perspective on Paul and so on. N.T. Wright, well-known Christian theologian, Bible scholar, often comes up in apologetic instances, but not here next week, particularly to do a debate, taking your questions. We've already had the questions in that Tom's going to be responding to, and so you'll hear that conversation between us both next week as we especially look at his new book, Paul and the Faithfulness of God, and it is massive. I couldn't believe the size of it when I saw it. It's sort of, it's like a breeze block, really. It is a weighty tome. So he's going to be talking about Paul, but also addressing things like hell, heaven, Satan, his views on creation, Adam and Eve, women and Paul. All kinds of areas we're going to be going into. So one to come back for if you're an enthusiast on that front at the same time next week. Hope you can join me for that here on Unbelievable. Don't forget you can find us online. Tell your friends about it. premier.org.uk/Unbelievable. Well, time to get back into the final part of our discussion today on education. We're asking, should the church keep out of it? And my guests have been Terry Sanderson of the National Secular Society, he's their president, and David Robertson of the Solas Centre for Public Christianity.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Terry, coming back to you as we start to close things up, you heard what David had to say there. He's absolutely certain that, A, you've sort of shot yourself in the foot by saying that Christian groups should be coming into schools to present their message, but B, if you're saying only the once, well, you know, how do you explain everything that a Christian believes in a single sitting? Responses, and then I'll let David come in.
Yeah, sure. I think that, as we said, there's more than one Christian point of view and perspective. In fact, there are hundreds of them. And if you try to give only one of these perspectives in a school, you're going to get a completely skewed idea of what Christianity is and any other religion come to that. So I would want children to hear all perspectives of a religious ideas and theologies. I wouldn't want them to hear just one perspective, but unfortunately in single faith schools that's what happens. But now, going on to the idea that if you take religion out of schools, it introduces some kind of secularist ideology, which I'm not quite sure what it would be, but it would simply be to keep the school free from any kind of ideological influence and allow it to develop across a whole spectrum of ideas, and it would be neutral. David seems to think there's something wrong with neutrality in school education, but I think that if you keep your options open, you can allow everybody a voice rather than just some people. And unfortunately, in faith schools, some people have got it sewn up.
I think it's a misunderstanding of faith schools and a generalization. But I mean, every school has ethos and values. And again, the myth of neutrality, that a school can be kept free of any kind of ideological influence. First of all, it's not going to happen. And secondly, I wouldn't want it to happen. I don't want my child to go to a school where racism or fascism is allowed as an equal ideology to everything else. And I find that I don't believe at all that the National Secular Society want that. I mean, I'm a little bit puzzled that Terry doesn't know what secular ideology is, or how he's president of the National Secular Society, and he's not able to tell us what a secular ideology is.
Well, maybe you can tell us.
Well, no, I would love to, because I find it fascinating that secularists, on the one hand, talk about values and so on, and then say they don't have an ideology.
You wanted to make a point about you said earlier you wanted to go back to this issue of abortion. Is it right or wrong, David? What were you trying to draw out there?
Well, what I was just simply drawing out is, in the report itself, the report is very clear on using Brooke as their only source, who are extreme advocates of abortion. Should it or should it not be the case that groups are in school, people are taught at least the view that all human life is sacred? Why should that not be allowed? Yet the National Secular Society, in their report, seem to be suggesting that unless their particular view of abortion is taught, this harms girls. And I find that, I just find that as a classic example of someone imposing their ideology and wanting it imposed on everyone. So I find it, for example, ridiculous that in school, if my daughter was to have, in primary school, if she was to have suntan cream put on her, that wasn't allowed unless she got a written letter of permission from me. But in secondary school, she can be given the morning after pill, and I, as a parent, not be told. And that is because of the pressure of the kind of ideology that Terry represents.
Well, of course, that isn't quite true, because abortion is legal in this country. There was a hugely long debate about it, and the decision to legalize it was made democratically. So it's not an invention of the National Secular Society or of secularism. It was one that came about because society wanted it. And in schools, the children are given often they're given both sides of the story and said, make up your own mind. But they aren't given a side of the story that says, this is wrong, Jesus said it's wrong, and the church says it's wrong, and the Pope says it's wrong, and you mustn't do it. They're saying that some people believe very strongly that abortion is wrong, but the law says that it is acceptable. So you make up your own mind. If you believe what the Pope says, you won't have an abortion. If you want to have an abortion, the law will permit it. That's all that children
I'm fascinated with two things. First of all, that you think that because something is legal, that makes it okay. Well, actually, Christian religious observance and Christian education
Everybody
in schools is legal.
That. Everybody
it's legal.
Knows that. Yeah, everybody knows what Christians think. They never tire of telling us. And it's
Wait a minute. You've just said to me that because something is legal, it's okay. Well, Christian education is legal, so it must be okay. So you should stop moaning about it.
I didn't say that. You know, you're putting words into my mouth that I didn't say.
You just said abortion is legal, so that's fine.
I said that abortion is legal. Children should know that. They should also know that there are a lot of people who don't think that it should be legal and don't think that it's moral.
I mean, I prefer my children to have a scientific grounding, and I would prefer them to know what the actual science is about the child in the womb and so on. But
well,
my point was...
This is not objective. This is not objective.
No, that
education.
Is objective. But my,
No, not at all.
No, that is objective. My point was just simply this, that in the name of neutrality, you seek to put forward your ideology. And that, for me,
not
is...
Not to suppress other people's ideas. Not to suppress other people's ideas. It's
No, I agree completely with that. I agree that we should not suppress other people's ideas, which is why I have no problem with atheists or secularists setting up their own schools. I have no problem with secularism or atheism being taught in a school or having atheist or secularist teachers. I do have a problem when atheists and secularists and humanists and so on say that theirs is the only neutral system and all other views should be, you know, boxed away in some kind of religious grouping and make sure that it doesn't intrude on the values of the school. The fact is that every school has values and ethos, and I'm concerned where those values and ethos, where that values and ethos come from. And incidentally, by the way, you're completely wrong in saying there are hundreds of versions of Christianity. If you knew your history and your theology, you would know that there are various strands and nuances, but anyone who has any kind of awareness of Christianity will know there are mainstreams. Also, the notion that you give that a child shouldn't be taught something from one perspective unless they can hear it from every perspective pretty well rules out almost every subject, because there are varieties of views on lots and lots of things. So, I mean, again, to me, the position that you're taking is a fantastical one. It's based on a myth of neutrality, and it's based on this idea of little children being able to take all the information there is from Wikipedia or Google or whatever and processing it and making up their own minds. That's not how life works.
We're going to have to start draw things to a close. A quick final comment from you, Terry, and then we'll be done.
Well, David doesn't seem to have read the report that we wrote. He seems to have read something completely different. But I don't recognise the way he's portrayed it. I see it as simply a statement of information that has been gathered from the mouths of the people we're complaining about. In schools, religious education has a place. It should be objective, it should be academic, it should not be from an evangelical perspective, and it should not be run by vicars and by priests and by imams. It should be run by teachers who are being trained to teach it objectively. That's all we're asking for.
Okay.
And not for proselytizing groups to be allowed to come into schools without parents' permission and to try to convince children that they should follow a particular religion.
We are going to leave it there, gentlemen. Been great to have you both on the programme today. Thank you very much. If you want to read the report for yourself, go to the website of the National Secular Society. That's secularism.org.uk. And of course, if you want to find out about the work of the Solas Centre for Public Christianity and their coming conference on Saturday the 23rd of November in Dundee on education, then go to solas-cpc.org. Those links and more available from the Unbelievable webpage, where you can find today's programme for download. Thanks again to both Terry and David for joining me on the programme today. I wonder what you thought about it. Going to give you a chance to respond. I'm going to be giving out the ways to contact the show in a short moment's time as we hear some of your feedback to the last few weeks of programming. But don't forget, you can find out all you need to know about today's programme at the website premier.org.uk/unbelievable.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Thanks to everyone who's been getting in touch in the last week or so in regards to past programmes. Here's one that came in this last week in advance of today's programme. Didn't get a chance to mention it, but David did mention it briefly. Alan, in this case, sent me this news item and asks, is this part of a worrying trend or a reasonable response to secularist demands in a plural society? And the news story is about the Church of Scotland proposing changing religious observance in schools to time for reflection. The Kirk, as the church in Scotland is known, said a time for reflections in schools would help shift the debate about religious observance in schools from an argument between opposing views to learning together. And the time for reflection proposed by the Kirk is based on five core principles. The head teacher decides who leads the time for reflection. outside leaders, including chaplains, do so to assist the school in delivering a time for reflection agenda defined by the school, bound by the need to be genuinely inclusive. The time for reflection should be built on the exploration of sensing as defined by the 2000 review. Sensing mystery, values, meaningfulness, changed qualities of awareness, otherness and challenge. Time for reflection is not and should never be confessional in nature. It is not worship or state-sponsored prayers either. And finally, the best time for reflection is often pupil-led. And so this is coming from the Church of Scotland. The question is effectively replacing Christian worship with something that's obviously rather different. Is that a good or a bad thing? Well, in fact, in this particular news article, which comes from Christian Today, the Reverend David Robertson is quoted here. And it says that he accuses the Church of Scotland of capitulating to the secularist agenda, and that a time for reflection would be a meaningless mishmash with no real spiritual value. Without Christian worship, Christianity does not exist. So there you go. I wonder what your thoughts are on that as well as what we heard David and Terry talking about on the show today. Will a time for reflection really do the same thing that Christian worship once did in many schools? Let's talk about the last week's show. And if you want to get in touch again in regards to this week's show, as many people have done about last week, then you can email me. That's unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Happy also to read out any tweets and Facebook comments I get. At unbelievablejb is one way of doing that. If you want to tweet me, facebook.com/unbelievablejb is a good way to get in touch as well. You can find, of course, all those links from the website, premier.org.uk/unbelievable. And while you're there, if you do go that way, why not click through to the link to the apologetics page, the newly released videos from Unbelievable, the conference 2013, all available either from that webpage or going directly to premier.org.uk/apologetics. Talks from Alistair McGrath, Peter S. Williams, and Amy Orr Ewing and many others who joined us on that day in May. So do go and check that out if you can. And Gabriel emails from the States, Alabama to be specific, says, can I have your feedback on this one? He's writing about last week's debate, or discussion really, between a humanist celebrant Hannah Hart and Faith Forster, who's a Christian church leader, about rites of passages, births, weddings, deaths, hatches, matches and dispatches, and the way that a humanist celebrant marks those occasions compared to a Christian minister. You say, it's striking to me that the issue of being made in the image of God and God's image being restored in humanity never came up in this episode in relation to celebrating human life. For the Christian, the image of God in humanity is key to why we believe we ought to celebrate and treat others with dignity. This is especially so with our hope and role in God's image being restored in humanity. This allows also to see why even those who don't believe in God still seek to honour such a dignity in humans. And you ask further, Gabriel, can you do a show about the gospel as the image of God being restored in humanity? I don't recall hearing your guests talk about the gospel this way on your show. It didn't, I must admit, specifically really come up in that context of their discussion last week, Gabriel, and perhaps it is something that it would be good to touch on. Josh regularly emails in. He's my Orthodox listener, not the only one, I don't think, but his sort of branch of Christianity. Says, I almost didn't listen to this week's podcast. To be honest, it sounded a bit boring, but I did, and I'm so glad I did. I found the discussion to be quite profound from a human point of view, and I don't think you could have had a more perfect guest to represent the Christian side. Faith Forster was understanding, gracious, and sincere with Hannah, your humanist guest, and I think it would have been easy for one to come across as mocking or patronising. You say the interview inspired a blog post that I hope you might find time to read when you have a spare moment. Well, I clicked through. Your blog's called So I Was Thinking the Other Day. And very interesting it is too. So thank you for sending me the link. And yes, if anyone else wants to follow up Josh's thoughts on that, that's the place to go. So I Was Thinking the Other Day.wordpress.com. And you go on to say, thanks also for reading some of my thoughts on the Catholic-Protestant debate. One very important note, I'm not sure if it was my typo or not, but there's a phrase you read which came across more or less as Christ being trampled down by death to death, which would lead some to think Catholics and Orthodox believe Christ was defeated by death. What I meant to type was Christ who trampled down death by death. In other words, Christ used his death to defeat death itself. And this phrase is part of an ancient hymn that we sing throughout the Easter season, hearkening to Paul's mockery of death when he says, "O death, where is your sting?" If you're able to find a moment to offer that correction on air, I'd be most grateful. There you go. Hope that's made it clear, Josh. I knew what you meant, and whether it was my mistake or yours, I think probably most people listening did as well. But speaking of that phrase of Paul's, "O death, where is your sting?" and the hymn that uses it, I heard a modern rendition recently. It sort of turns it into a football chant, which goes something like, "Who are you? Who are you? Oh, death, where's your sting? Who are you? Who are you? You're not singing anymore." Which I thought was quite a fun way of putting that sort of thought of Paul's into a modern rendition. Thanks also to Avril, who got in touch to say, really interested in the humanist view of life. But how can you equate the great debate surrounding the beginning of the universe, the creation of all that we are, with being a keep fit fanatic or anything else? Hannah mentioned running. These are questions mankind has been considering since the beginning. The most important question a human being can ask: why am I here? What is my purpose? What's the meaning of life? Many people just don't seem to want to know. We seem to be sleepwalking ourselves into hell, and not just hell after death, hell in life. That may sound alarmist, but I hear many people deeply concerned, and not just Christians, about their children's future, where they're going as a society. The Bible tells us quite clearly over and over again, deny God at your peril. Thanks so much, Justin, for the programme. What a difference you make. Thank you, Avril. Here's Derek, who says, great show this week, Justin. You raised the point about whether the human experience of grief points to something beyond death. And I think Hannah Hart answered well. We are intensely social creatures, and as such, deep emotional bonds between us are easy to understand from an evolutionary point of view. This is disrupted at death. It's worth noting that there is some evidence of grief-like behaviour in animals in a proto-human fashion. You could look at the New York Times article, "Want to Understand Mortality? Look to the Chimps." There's also a book by Barbara King called "How Animals Grieve," studying this topic. So we're not special creatures in this respect, says Derek. Thank you for all those emails in regard to last week's show. If you want to catch it again, of course, you can go to the website, and it's there as ever on the podcast too, premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Still getting lots of response to the show of the week before, which was Reformed theologian, Bible teacher James White debating Peter D. Williams, a Catholic, on Catholic theology versus sola scriptura, whether the ultimate authority for Christians is scripture alone or scripture plus Catholic teaching, doctrine and church tradition. So just a quick one here from Pastor Daniel Sinclair in Patterson, California, says, I loved your guests on this recent podcast, but was a little frustrated by their extreme polarities, which presents what I think is a false dilemma. Your Catholic wants to elevate tradition, experience and reason to the same level as scripture, and Dr. White seems to want to eliminate them as any kind of authority. The middle way here is a framework common in Protestantism, that of the Wesleyan quadrangle. We hold out scripture as the supreme authority, but use tradition, reason and experience to aid us in understanding and applying scripture. In addition, we don't need the magisterium or any spiritual authority to define what scripture means for us, for as John taught in 1 John 2:27, we are all priests now and all have the Holy Spirit. I agree with Dr. White that the Catholic Church has abused the authority of tradition and created heretical and antichrist doctrines and practices which cloud the gospel at best. I also disagree with your Catholic guest that sola anything is at least a misnomer, if not a misrepresentation of the relationship between spiritual authorities in our lives. Thank you very much. That's Pastor Daniel Sinclair. He blogs at wholereason.com. Thanks also to others who've been getting in touch over other things as well. This is from Hal Helms, says, I'm a long-time listener of the podcast. Think you do a tremendous job. It's such a relief to hear people discuss things without the meanness of spirit so common in radio discussions, at least those shows we have here in America. I have one question for you. When did Christians stop believing in Christ? Perhaps it's because I'm in Texas, but I didn't seem to get the memo that we Christians are apparently embarrassed by the old-time belief, and we now much prefer evidence, logic and law. I wonder, have we really thought through what this means? Evidence can ever and only return a probability. Is that what we mean by believing Jesus? Do we need a new Council of Nicaea to formulate a new creed? We believe in one God, 98.47% certitude. The Father Almighty, and in one Lord Jesus Christ, 96.91% probability. I wonder the number of people who came to faith in Jesus because they heard a cracking good ontological proof for the existence of God. I would think it's vanishingly small. There we go. And you go on to critique some apologetics and so on. You say, you finish by saying, you're better than this, Justin. You're a wonderful moderator. Keep discussions moving in a fair and balanced manner. Is it too much to ask that the topic of the discussions match the level of their moderator? Well, that's very kind of you to say, Al, in regard to my moderation. But we are sort of an apologetics debate show at the end of the day. And so, in a sense, we are talking about, yes, probabilities and arguments and the intellectual reasons. I wouldn't ever want anyone listening, though, to think that that is the sum total of what faith in Christ is, though. And of course, there is a big difference between looking at these things from the outside and living them from the inside. So, but there is a place, I think, for evidence, logic and law. Not that we prefer that over a relationship with Christ, but can the two not be complementary? Yes, perhaps it's about not doing one to the exclusion of the other. Anyway, that's my little soapbox. Thank you for helping me to get on it today. Think we're probably just about out of time. So thank you again for listening into the programme today. Just quickly to Dan Barkman, who asked, is the discussion forum for your programme still available? You're probably referring to the Premier community, which closed down about a year or so ago. If you want to get involved, best place to do that now is on the Facebook site, where we can do discussions and stuff for the page. That's facebook.com/unbelievablejb. There is also a group which is kind of there for more kind of, you know, ongoing discussions and so on that group members bring in. It can be a bit of a bear pit, I'll warn you, just in advance. You know, it's a pretty forthright place. But if you've got the gumption, go ahead there and put your 2 pence worth in. Anyway, thank you for listening today. Really appreciate all these emails, and I hope you come back for next week's show. Got a cracker lined up for you.
You're unbelievable.
N.T. Wright joins me again on the programme. He's back, not for a debate this time, but to answer some of your questions. Yes, in the past week you've been emailing me after I put out an appeal on Twitter and Facebook with your questions for N.T. Wright. I'm going to be putting them to him next week. He's going to be answering questions on hell, Satan, creation, Paul, which is the subject of his major new book, which he'll also be talking about, Paul's attitude towards women, can we believe in the God of the Old Testament given the God of love in the New Testament, and lots of other things besides. Fascinating discussion with Tom Wright, with your questions next week. Hope you can come back for that. Hope that you have a great week as well, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. If you're on podcast, I'll see you next time. If you're here on Premier Christian Radio this Saturday afternoon, stick around. I'm talking to Keith Ward in the Profile interview next.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.